The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
You are listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. Today's episode is brought to you by GetOutOfTheMess.com. Let Asha, your Legal Shield associate, connect you to a legal insurance plan that's right for you. Quality attorneys at established law firms for about $20 a month.
I'll take it.
Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old, rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, personal empowerment coach and host of The Overwhelmed Brain. This is the personal growth show for the critical thinker. On every episode, we'll talk about practical, down-to-earth steps to help you improve your mood and keep you sane in this powerful journey we call life. I want to help you bridge the gap between your emotions and reason, causing you to discover why you do the things you do and what you can do to reach higher levels of happiness and lower levels of stress and overwhelm. Everything I talk about on the show should not be mistaken for actual medical advice or treatment and is intended to be for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult your physician before making any changes to your medical treatment. Let's get started increasing your emotional intelligence, strengthening your self-worth and self-esteem, motivating you to be your authentic self, and giving you the forward momentum to help you learn, heal, grow, and evolve. All right, I got a great question a while back regarding receiving negative feedback, especially at work. The person wrote and said, hey, I was wondering if you have any advice for people that don't like negative feedback at work. And they go on to say something about worrying about everything and having low confidence. And I want to address that as well. But the first thing I want to talk about is how you receive negative feedback. Now, me personally, I thrive on it. I love negative feedback because what that tells me, and this is how I want you to look at it too, what that tells me is that the more people that provide negative feedback, the more they care. Now, they may not care, but that's not where my belief system goes. My belief system goes to a place of, wow, they really care enough to tell me that I'm doing something wrong or bad. Because why would they tell me something like that? Why would someone share negative feedback with you? You might think, oh, they're just being pretentious and arrogant, and they must think they know better than I do. And I tell you what, when you jump into that space, you lose a golden opportunity to either introspect, figure things out inside yourself, or improve yourself, improve your work, improve your performance in some way, you lose that golden opportunity. As soon as you bring it inward and go, oh, that hurts, I'm going to sulk, I'm going to feel like no one loves me, that I'm not worthy. As soon as you do that, you lose that opportunity. And what I'm saying is that when you receive negative feedback about anything you do, and in this particular case about work, look at that as information that you would pay to receive. Seriously, because when someone gives you feedback, the time they took to give you that feedback is worth every ounce of ouch. Every ounce of, oh, I don't want to hear this, but let me hear this and figure out if it's something I need to do for myself to improve myself. Now, I'm not letting people get away with when someone calls you a jerk. You know, you're just a jerk and you don't do anything right. And I can't stand working with you, or I can't stand the music you listen to. I mean, these are personal opinions that they obviously don't want in their life. That's fine. But that's not feedback for you. If somebody said, I don't like the music you listen to, that's not really feedback, because you're not going to take that feedback and go, well, I'll just change my taste in music. Now, you may lower the volume of your radio, if that's what they're talking about. You may find another station that you like just to gain some sort of camaraderie or getting along in the office. But when you get real feedback, like, you know, you turned in this report and it's really disappointing. There's no numbers down here. There's no data over here. There's no results over there. I just thought you'd do a better job. And then they just shake their head and walk away. And yes, that is a whole lot of ouch. That is a whole lot of, wow, this really sucks. I can't believe I thought I worked so hard on that report, and here I am getting this negative feedback. Oh, what do I do with it? What you do with it is, in your mind, I want you to practice, wow, thank you. That's the first thing I want you to put in your mind. I want you to interrupt what you normally feel, that ouch, or whatever you call it, and interrupt it and just, you know, say to yourself, stop. In your mind, you say, stop, and thank you so much. Now, you'll be incongruent with that at first, because you won't feel like thanking them. You'll feel like doing something else to them, or you'll feel just down in the dumps. You'll feel depressed. You'll feel whatever, because someone's pointing something out that they don't like about you, that they think you're inferior, that they think you're unintelligent. All these thoughts will go through your mind. And that's what you'll think they're thinking of you. But the idea, when someone gives you any type of criticism, or in my case, a bad review of my show, or a bad review of my teachings, or a bad commentary about me or my teachings, if someone does that to you, bad commentary, criticism, negative feedback, whatever it is, the reason I want you to see it as a golden opportunity that will pay you back tenfold in the future is because most people are too nice. Hear me out. Most people won't tell you what's wrong. Most people want to play nice and not make you feel bad. So when you have that straggler, that outlier that comes up and says, this is wrong. You did bad. You're a bad person because of this, this, and this. This report is terrible. This job or project that you did was a failure. I mean, these are all full of ouch. These are all full of really hurtful words, especially when you have low self-esteem, which is part of the second part of the letter that I got. But when you hear that and it hits your esteem, if we can call it that, and your esteem goes lower, and you feel less worthy, and you feel like all that work you did on something, or all everything that you thought that you were doing right is now being put back in your face. When that happens, then you tend to be less productive. You tend to do things that match your state, match your emotional state at the time. And when you do things that match your emotional state, then the things you do, if you're in a bad state, aren't typically as productive as they could be. Which is why I want you to practice interrupting where you go with the words, thank you. Now, this is in your mind, but after you interrupt it in your mind, I want you to say it to the person criticizing you. You have no idea how this will change your reality. If you drop your head instead, and go, oh, I'm such a failure, or, you know, anything that you say to yourself, that's going to put you in that bad emotional state. And, you know, no matter what, it might still put you in a bad emotional state. I can read something about me or my show, and somebody says something that calls me terrible. Like I got feedback once that said, you give terrible advice for people going through emotional abuse. Don't listen to this guy. He's a bad, bad teacher. They wrote this on a review somewhere. And I was like, wow. And I had to correct what they were saying because they were wrong about something. But at the same time, the very first place I went to was, thank you. Now, why do you say thank you? Well, you say thank you because hardly anyone does that for you. Hardly anyone tells you what you're doing wrong. I mean, I've been with groups of people, my mentors, my peers, my support group, and most of them, if not, no, I'll say 99% of them have always said, hey, great job. Hey, good job on that project. Hey, good this, good that. And it's wonderful and ego boosting to hear that from someone, from many people, lots of people in your groups. But the one person that says something negative, we know how it feels. That one person said something negative, and then we sink. And we don't like the feeling. And I'm here to say that it's okay if you feel that. I'm not taking that away from you. But I want you to say thank you in your mind, and then verbally, or on a message, or email, whatever, say thank you. You say thank you for taking the time to share that with me. I'm going to look at that and see what I can improve. What that does is, first of all, if the person is attacking you, it neutralizes that attack energy from them. I mean, imagine that. Imagine if you had the magic pill to neutralize someone's attack toward you. That magic pill is acknowledgement. It is letting them know that you hear them, you understand them, and you will look at yourself for the commentary they're making. I'm not saying they're right. I'm not saying that everything they say is true. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm saying that when you acknowledge and thank someone for saying something negative about who you are, what you do, what you've done, you thank them. Because how many people in your life will ever give you the gift of telling you something that you might need to improve in yourself? Again, they could be wrong. But there is a multifaceted perspective here. The perspective is, A, they could be coming at you with an attack energy. If they're coming at you with an attack energy, acknowledge and thank and let them know that you'll definitely look into that. And be genuine. Be grateful. Thank you so much for sharing that with me. You know what? You might have a point. I'm going to look at that. And I appreciate that you took the time to share that. A lot of people wouldn't do that. So thank you. I mean, how does that make you feel when I say that? Let's just say that you wanted to attack someone. You're such a bad person. Why did you do it this way? And they said, you know what? You're right. I'll look at that. Thank you so much for sharing that with me. I didn't realize that I messed up so bad. And if you're in that attack energy, how does that change that energy about you? It changes a lot. I mean, if you can't experience this firsthand, I'm kind of doing it by proxy for you. Because when I try this on, when I go, I'm angry at you, and this is why I'm angry at you, and you did this, and you did this. And instead of them going, what? You need to step off. I worked my butt off on that project, and I can't believe you can't see all that hard work that went into that. As soon as I do that, it completely fuels their fire, and now you're butting heads. Even though still, you could be 100% right. You could be 100% right. Everything you've done could have been done no better than you did it. And because of that, you tend to put a little pride in your work. You tend to put, maybe you know you're an honorable person. Maybe you feel like your integrity is being attacked. But I tell you what, make it a habit to say thank you in your mind. Wow, thank you so much. And then verbally, wow, thank you so much. Thank you for taking the time, because not a lot of people would take the time to tell me that. That is very helpful to me. I mean, that's what you'd say to them. That is very helpful to me. Now, does it matter if you really mean thank you? I mean, you could be devastated. But what it does is it stops you from going down the same old repeated patterned road that you are normally used to going. oh, someone put me down. I'll sulk. I'll walk away. I'll figure it out and try not to be upset for the rest of the year. That's typically where a lot of people go. That's used to be where I went. It would hurt because in my past, in my people-pleasing past, I wanted everyone to be happy and everyone to look up to me in some way, like, oh, that, he's a good guy. He never messes up or he tries his best. So with that negative feedback, I had to learn to accept it and learn that it's such valuable information. Now, what do you do with that information? Somebody says something that you know is wrong. The idea behind that is somebody criticizes you. Somebody gives you negative feedback and you know it's not right. Again, you thank them because that kind of information, even though they might be wrong about it, is valuable. It's what people get paid to do. I had a professional radio show reviewer that charges a lot of money. It was a gift to me, though. They reviewed my show for free. That gave me so much criticism about this show. It was like a year and a half ago. The way it was formatted then, the way I ended transitions, the way I just randomly went off on another topic. It was all kinds of criticisms that really did not feel good to hear, especially because I put so much effort into every show, and to hear someone just tear it all up, that's hard. That was hard. And at that point, I wasn't really in a thank you mood. I didn't go into, oh, thank you so much. I went into that son of a, why would he say that? I worked so hard on this and worked so hard on that. I took it as a personal attack. But later on, I decided to review everything that he said about the show in an analytical fashion as if my identity wasn't attached to it. Can you do that? Yes, you can do this. You can detach your identity, who you are, from what is being criticized. Even when they say, I don't like the way you talk, that's still not who you are. That's how sound emits from who you are. I know I'm reaching a little bit, but I want you to remember that who you are is so much more than you believe you are, at least often. A lot of us will get into a state where we go, oh, I'm not as smart as I thought I was, or I don't really feel smart at all, or I don't feel worthy, I don't feel this, I don't feel that. And then when someone reinforces these little feelings in us, that's when it really hurts. So acknowledging and thanking and saying, wow, I'm going to think about what you said, is a great, healthy pattern for you to develop. And in my case, when I analyzed everything that this person said about my show, instead of looking at it as an attack on my identity, I looked at it as a golden opportunity to have someone give me a truth that might actually improve me, improve my life, improve my results. There's a lot you can get from someone's negativity about you. Again, some people do it just because they're mean. Some people do it just to make you feel bad. Some people don't even make sense what they say. But what this is what happens is that as you accept criticism, especially from, I don't know, not so dangerous people, like if you're in a relationship and you're being abused or emotionally abused, or someone's lying to you all the time, they're probably not the best resource to go, oh, thank you so much for your feedback. They're not a good resource for that because they're going to make stuff up that has nothing to do with what's really going on. They're going to make stuff up to make you feel bad, especially, and this happens a lot, so that you'll believe in them out of guilt and feeling bad yourself. Like you see them on the pedestal. And there are people like that, that will do it just to push your buttons and give you nothing to work on. When somebody says, you're a bad person, and doesn't tell you how you're bad, that's when it's important to inquire further. That's when it's important to drill down into what they're saying and ask them, in what way am I bad? This is what I want you to do with criticism. You thank the person verbally. Thank you so much for that. Again, not with everyone. Sometimes there are toxic people, and I have many shows on toxic people. So if you don't know what to do with the toxic people in your life, listen to one of my episodes where the word toxic is in the title of the episode, and you'll understand better what to do with those people. But for the most part, someone who is giving you criticism, thank you so much. Thank you for taking the time to do that. Not many people would take the time to share that with me, and I'm very appreciative of it. You can say something like that to help squash any attacking energy that you might feel. And when you do that, they typically let up. They typically give in a little bit. Well, maybe I was a little too hard on you. So I know you're doing the best you can. That's what happens a lot. They will back off. Well, maybe I was a little too hard on you. There are exceptions, of course, but that's the general thing that happens when you neutralize the energy. But if they say something like, you're always bad at this. You're always bad at writing reports. You gave me the worst reports all the time. If they say something like that, then that doesn't help you improve your behavior. That doesn't help at all. So what you need to do is stay very present, stay very conscious, and go, what specifically can I do to improve? And if someone says, you just need to take some writing classes or take an Excel class, learn more about this and this and this, then you still want to drill down and go, what specifically bothers you about this report? And then they might finally say something like, well, when I'm reading it, I look and I see that most of your words are left justified, but every now and then there's one that's like in the middle of the page or moved over a space, and it really bothers me. Because this is what people do. They always say, the whole thing's broken, when there's only one real problem. I used to deal with this in computer repair. Somebody would contact me out of the blue and say, my computer's broken, nothing works. And I'd be like, really? So my thought is, oh no, they dropped their computer in the bathtub and made all kinds of sparks and it doesn't work anymore. So to me, that's what I hear. My computer's broken, nothing works. Nothing works? Not even the power? And then I have to ask questions. So what happens when you turn your computer on? And they'll go, my computer's already on. Oh, so your computer works. And they'll go, yes, of course. And I'll say, okay, I just want to understand where you are. But I have to be very specific. Okay, what happens when you move your mouse? Well, I see the arrow moving around. So the mouse works. Yes, of course. I'm not talking about that. That's what people do, especially when they're talking to any type of IT support person. They'll have this broad generalization. Nothing works. Get down here fast. So the idea is just to ask more questions. So if you're criticized, ask questions. What specifically bothers you about this? What specifically did I do wrong so I can fix it? And staying present, staying conscious, and just looking for facts, just looking for data that you can work with. Because if somebody doesn't like you and they just say, I don't like anything you write, and you don't have any specifics, you can't work with it. And that just shows where they are in a different way. Like if they're not willing to help you improve, then their comments are kind of useless. I mean, you could certainly respond with that. Why would you tell me if you don't even know what to improve? They may not like that. They may say, well, you need to be smart enough to figure it out yourself. In which case, they're not very helpful, and maybe they might be a toxic person. Maybe they just don't like you. Maybe they have a beef with you. Maybe you're smarter than them, and it makes them feel stupid. So they come back, and they say, you did this all wrong, because they can't read it or whatever. But once you drill down, ask the questions, what specifically, you can also ask the question, okay, what would you like me to do to make it better for next time? And again, these questions can be answered a number of ways, but hopefully you'll get more details. So let me go full circle back to, oh, I'm getting negative criticism. This feels bad. I already said, you know, say thank you and then say it verbally and then ask how you can improve. When you do this often enough, it doesn't necessarily take the sting away, because I still feel that sting. I mean, I'm not impervious to negativity. I still feel the sting because it does feel like some sort of you're inferior, you're wrong, you need to fix yourself. It feels like that. Where I go now is that that person would also react the same way to negative criticism about them too. But where I go with that now is that after the sting, I need to process it for a little bit. I look back at the facts. I look at the data. Let's see if there is something to improve. Let's see if there's something that's of value here that I can look at objectively and figure out if I can improve upon that. Because if one person feels it, then maybe somebody else feels it. Then maybe 100 people, maybe 1,000 people feel the same way, but they're all too nice and they won't tell me. This is why this kind of feedback is so valuable and very rare. Like, I've belonged to groups of people, groups of masterminds, where everyone just complimented each other and nobody ever tore anything apart. They might say, oh, I don't like that color. Maybe you can use a different color. And that's not enough. But the one comment that always stands out and is the most effective is the one that tears it apart. I prefer this. When I'm trying to improve myself, I prefer this. Because what happens is that when you start fine-tuning what you do, how you behave, not necessarily in accordance with one person's rules, but because you've evaluated what they've said and understood that maybe there could be improvement there, you're going to get less and less criticism over time. Again, some people just criticize to criticize. They want to make you angry, but most people are simply too nice. They don't want to criticize. And as you improve yourself in ways that the criticism helps you, you're going to see your life change. My show changed. My show matured. My show, I believe, in my opinion, got better. It got easier to listen to. It's now more organized. I feel better doing it. And it usually goes faster because of the changes I made. I was really holding on to the old way of thinking because that was my comfort zone. That's where I felt safe. But safe wasn't popular. When I felt safe doing exactly what I wanted to do with this show, then, you know, some people would listen, some people wouldn't. And it wasn't very helpful to people. It was more my playground. Yeah, well, everyone has their own playground. So if I'm playing in my own playground, I'm only going to attract people that like the swing set that I have on it, like the seesaw. I'm only going to attract people that want to play with the things on that playground and no one else. It's like, I don't have a slide on my playground, so half the population will never listen to my show because I don't have that slide. So those comments from that professional really helped improve my show. I felt the sting when I first heard them because he left me an entire audio file to listen to. I felt that sting as I listened. Then I let it hit me. I identified my emotions that I was going through. I felt it. I expressed it. I expressed it to my girlfriend. I let out maybe some anger, like, he doesn't know what he's talking about, because I wanted to express what was going on inside of me, not suppress it, not fester with it, because, you know, festering emotions typically can turn into a very damaging emotional psychological state. So I don't let those emotions fester. I express them. Even if I have no justification for what I'm saying, it's energy inside. I'm trying to express it outwardly, express it externally. It helps me release it so that I can now process things a little bit more analytically and figure out what I'm going to change. It doesn't mean you always change. It just means that you look at things objectively, you take them as facts and go, he might be right about that. He's completely wrong about that and I won't change it. That's who I like to be. That's who I like to express. But he is right about this. And I didn't even know about this. I wouldn't even have thought about that. Good point. And that was just a mean thing to say. I don't think I said that, but you get the idea. So yes, dealing with negative feedback is tough. It always feels like an attack. I'm sure there are people out there that have no problem dealing with it. I'm pretty okay when I hear negative stuff. My way of working through it is expressing it to everyone in the world. When I get something negative said about me, I'll bring it on the air and talk about it because I want it out in the open. I want to know if there's something that people don't like. I want to know if I'm doing something wrong because it helps me become a better person. It helps me become a better teacher. What I teach should affect people positively. And if one or more people out there aren't affected that way, You know, you can't please everyone, of course, but it's nice to know how they're affected. Because if I'm affecting them, maybe I'm affecting other people. And maybe, just maybe, I'm missing something that I need to address that will help me become better at what I do and improve my life in some way. When we come back, I'm going to talk about the second half of this letter, which is addressing worrying about everything. Sounds like a little overwhelmed brain there. Be right back. All right, welcome back. I want to talk about worrying about everything. This is the second half of this letter that came in that said, do you have any advice for people that don't like negative feedback, especially at work? Also, I worry about everything and I have low self-confidence. And the writer goes on to say that they constantly feel something bad will happen and that they even deserve it. And I also have a victim mentality. So there's a lot of topics here. As for victim mentality, I've talked about victim mentality on shows before. Just go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com and type in the word victim, and you'll see some articles and episodes on that. But I want to talk about worrying about everything. Now, if you've done any internet searches for how to address your overwhelm, you're going to get pretty much the same advice across the board. Don't work on everything. Work on one thing. And that advice, as practical as it is, especially for this show, is really good advice. When you have all these plates spinning, you know, those performers that have all these plates spinning on these sticks and they're balancing and they keep spinning all the plates to make sure that they don't fall, because you get that feeling. You have all these plates spinning. What am I going to do? I heard the best acronym on the word focus. Follow one course until success. And I love that acronym. That helped me finish my ebooks. I have two ebooks out there. That helped me finish my regular book. That helps me finish every show every week. That I follow one course until success, which means when that email comes in, I might have to ignore it. When there are other plates spinning and other fires burning, I might have to prioritize. But if I can prioritize and go, this needs to be done no matter what, that's what I'm doing. I'm following that course until I'm successful. And I just have to remind myself of that. If I'm ever going to finish this, I have to follow this course until it's done. I have to do this one thing until I'm done. When I started doing that, that changed my life. Now, what happens often is that we follow one course and we're on one project or we're doing one thing and we have other things coming in and we just know they're piling up. And we know that there's going to be more work to do when we're finished with this one. So we tend to just stop doing this one and start doing the next one because it's really quick. I'll just do this one really quick. And that can be a massive error. That can be a massive error in judgment, because what you're doing is now you have yet another plate still spinning. And I always liken this to Dave Ramsey's rules for paying off credit card debt. If you don't know Dave Ramsey, you should know him if you have any sort of financial concerns. Find him in iTunes, find him online, Dave Ramsey. It's probably DaveRamsey.com. But he helped me get out of a big debt in the early 2000s, maybe late 90s. But his debt snowball method works for a lot of things in life. The debt snowball method is you pay off the smallest credit card first. And I have always done it the opposite way. I always put as much as I could into the largest credit card first. And then I would just give $10 toward that small one. And another $10. And another $10. And that plate keeps spinning. But you never feel like you're getting ahead. Never. It's always that overwhelmed feeling. I apply this to our emotional state. When you have overwhelm, you have all these plates spinning, finish one first so that that plate is off your plate. So that plate is off the stage, so that you're done with that plate. You take it down, you're no longer spinning it. It doesn't exist anymore. And what that does for you inside mentally and emotionally is it makes you feel better that there's less on your plate. There's less on the stage of spinning plates. And boy, that feeling propels you forward. It motivates you to do the next one until you're finished, and do the next one until you're finished. And I understand that there are times when you keep getting new plates to spin when you're still working on the old ones. This is going to happen. This happens to me a lot. This is why I get backed up in emails. But I'm still going to follow my sequence and take care of the ones that I'm focused on first, because that frees my plate, makes me feel good, makes me feel like I've accomplished something, and keeps me moving forward. So this is what overwhelm is about. Overwhelm is about seeing the big picture, zooming way out, and seeing all these problems and all this confusion and disorganization. When you zoom way out like that, you will get overwhelmed. When you zoom in on one thing and resolve that one thing, you'll see that zoomed out picture a little smaller. And that feeling that you get of accomplishment and success will give you the energy for the next one. That's what I like about Dave Ramsey's debt snowball effect, is that you pay off the small one, and then you pay off the next small one, and the next one, and you'll work your way up to the bigger ones. You put the minimum payment in the big ones, and the biggest payments in the small ones, and suddenly the 5 credit card statements that you used to get every month is now only 4, then 3, then 2, and then you have extra money to put toward the big one. And I guarantee you, I've done this, it works. And it works emotionally as well. And, you know, it works at work. It works with projects. And my disclaimer is, yes, there's always exceptions. There are jobs out there that will keep feeding you too many things to do and you'll never catch up. There are jobs like that. And if you can't keep up, it may not be the job for you. I don't know. Or you may need to ask for more resources or an assistant. Or, I don't know, there's all kinds of ways to look at that. Or go to Happen to Your Career. If you've listened to a show for a while, you know about Happen to Your Career. Go to happentoyourcareer.com/brain. And he has free resources on careers and finding the right career for you. It's worth looking into if you feel so overwhelmed at work and you cannot catch up, you cannot keep up, you never feel that success, you never feel that forward momentum, then you're just being thrown too much, and you might need a change of pace. So you can apply anything that I've said today to your work, to your career, well, it's the same thing, to relationships, to your personal growth, any category of life, and you'll find that you succeed more often than not. Because we're so used to going, let's take care of the biggest problems first, the ones that are going to take weeks or months or years, and we never finish the little ones, and the little ones keep stacking up, or they just keep showing themselves to us, telling us that we still need to deal with those things. That's tough. That's really tough. Anyway, to that letter writer, thank you so much for sharing that and asking those questions. Great topics to talk about. And one of the last things you said, and I'm just going to focus on the person who wrote the letter right now, that you said, I constantly feel something bad will happen and I deserve it. That is a powerful statement. I don't have really time to talk about that on this episode. But what I want you to do is get the Stop Self-Sabotage worksheet on my website. Go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com and get that worksheet. Or just buy my book, The Overwhelmed Brain, Personal Growth for Critical Thinkers. And that same exercise is in the book. Once you learn how you're sabotaging yourself and what your values are, then you'll figure out your path and what your bigger vision is for yourself. And that sentence, like I said, is very deep. And there's a lot more to it. But I want you to start there and then send me an update. We'll be right back after this. All right, I want to tell you about getoutofthemess.com. Asha is a representative for Legal Shield, and she can connect you with a service that will help you not only with the big stuff, but also the little stuff. This service actually provides you with a law firm. If you're in the U.S. or Canada, you can get a law firm assigned to you in your state or province, and you'll have access to all of their attorneys. It's a crazy inexpensive way to have an attorney at your beck and call. And it's just funny, I was looking at the member testimonials at getoutofthemess.com, and some of them are things that we all have been through. Like this one guy, talk about small things. This one guy bought a new car and got car washes for life. And there was no charge with the car washes, and he got into a membership with the car dealer, and they said, hey, this is, you know, free car washes for life. And he goes to the dealership to get his car washed, and they said, there's a $3 hand washing fee. And he's like, there is? I don't remember seeing any fees, but okay. Well, he decided to check his paperwork, and nowhere in the paperwork did it say there was a $3 fee. So, you know, he's thinking of the principle of the thing and how he was promised one thing and given another. And even though it was only $3, he just didn't like the idea that he felt conned. So he called the Legal Shield number and had an attorney call him back. And I think they sent the dealer a letter. And a few days later, they sent the person who bought the car a letter along with a $3 money order and said, hey, we're sorry. No longer are we charging that $3 service fee. And he's like, you know, they not only saved me money, but they've saved the whole community money. And I thought that was a pretty cool story, because no matter how small the problem is, it's great to have someone available to help you out. And there's nothing more powerful than saying, well, if you can't help me, I'll get a hold of my attorney and they'll figure it out. And that's what this guy did. And that's what other members of the service have done. And I want you to have that ability too, to just to be able to say that no matter how much you might be being ripped off or how much someone's trying to push you into that corner, don't be bullied. Have this service available. Go to getoutofthemess.com, contact Asha, ask her if this service would be perfect for you. And you can call her too, 678-355-8777. And she's happy to answer any question you have. That's getoutofthemess.com. 678-355-8777. All right, welcome back. I want to talk about enabling and what enabling is and how damaging it can be to you, to the person you're enabling, and to the family dynamic if there's more people involved. I've received several emails over the past month or two regarding helping someone who is doing behavior that is damaging or destructive or bad for them. Not only is their behavior bad for them, but like I said, if they're in a family, then it's bad for the entire family because the entire family is affected. I think I said on my last show that I rarely saw my family for a number of years because of one person. That one person was my stepfather, and his drinking was a big issue in the family. And members of my family didn't like being around him and were nervous when he was near and were embarrassed by the things he said and the things he did. So he changed the vibe for my entire family. So I didn't return home a lot to visit them because of this one element. Now I'm a different person. I was gone long enough where I had healed from a lot of the stuff from my childhood and have gotten to the point where I can honor myself, honor my personal boundaries, so that if and when he shows up in my life, it's easy for me to keep my distance from him in a lot of ways, mentally, emotionally, physically. And if he is too near, then I can still stand up for myself and not have him affect me in ways that he still affects my family today. But let me get back to the enabling part of this, because when you have someone or multiple people in your family that are doing behavior that you don't like, that is very toxic, then that behavior is what causes most of the problems, if not all the problems sometimes. All is kind of generalizing it, but it sure seems like when there's somebody in your family that is doing bad behavior, they are a lot of the times the focus of that bad behavior, and every decision that everyone else makes is influenced by that person. Every thought is influenced by that person. Everything you do, say, think, touch, feel, taste, all this stuff, it seems to be influenced by the person doing behavior that is toxic for the whole family. And what happens is when we're in that situation, when we are with someone that we don't like their behavior and we know it's toxic, we have an opportunity to enable or not. And I think this might be very important for you to hear. If you're in a situation where someone is out of control, someone has behavior that affects the entire family, and they repeat this behavior a lot, then I think it's important for you to understand how enabling is almost as toxic as the behavior that you find toxic. What is enabling? Enabling is when you help someone be the way you don't want them to be. That is it's my definition. It's not my only definition, but I think that's a good definition to use for what I'm talking about right now. Because when you don't want someone to be a certain way or do certain behavior, you can work against that system, or you can work with that system so that behavior is repeated. For example, when my stepfather used to throw his glass at the wall after he drank his screwdriver or whatever he drank, and it would smash into a million pieces, my mom would always clean it up. Always. So instead of him being accountable to clean it up himself, she cleaned it up for him, and that showed him that there was no accountability for his actions, that he could simply throw a glass anytime or break anything, and someone was there to clean up his mess. That helped him do his behavior. Now, this is a very sensitive subject for some people, because sometimes you're in a situation that if you're not doing some sort of cleaning up or covering up or helping the toxic person out, that the situation can get more dangerous. So I understand the flip side of this. But I think it's important to know that when you do anything that takes away someone's accountability, some toxic person's accountability, you are essentially allowing them to continue their bad behavior. It doesn't mean you want it to happen. It doesn't mean that you wish you could do something else, or that you might be in a situation where if you do something else, that it could only be worse. For example, if my mom didn't clean up the glass, then her children could cut their hands and feet if they touched it. You know, there are many, many variables here. But it's vital to realize just how much you might enable someone if you're in a situation like this. And, you know, ideally, you don't want to be with a toxic person. If they're toxic, you get yourself and your family away from them if possible. Because toxic is like radiation. If you're around, plutonium for long enough, you're going to burn. You're going to be irradiated. You're going to be toxic to yourself. This is what happens. Toxic people make people around them toxic. So not only are you enabling their behavior, but your behavior is being altered and affecting those around you. And so now you have this process being repeated through the person enabling the toxic person. It's toxicity that spreads like a zombie virus. Unfortunately, that is not far from the truth, even though a zombie virus hopefully is fictional. It seems that way. It's like one person affects the other, and eventually it spreads like that virus or plague. And this happened in my family. The people that were around the toxic person were highly affected, including myself. I became dysfunctional. My mom was dysfunctional. My sisters had their own dysfunctions. There were many coping mechanisms introduced to the members of my family. There were drugs introduced to members of my family. There were bad relationships that we all got into that had we not been around the toxic person, then maybe we would not have either attracted toxic people in our life or chose differently or been so toxic ourselves that we didn't create a bad environment for the person we ended up with. Like I said, there's all kinds of results that aren't favorable when the toxic person stays in the family unit. So my message to you is this. If you know someone that is toxic, how do you know they're toxic? You just don't like being around them. The behavior they do embarrasses you, or you wish they were a lot different. You wish they could be the supporter you want, the nurturer, the provider, everything that you want in a person. If it's a parent or a brother or a sister, you wish they could be something else because right now being around them almost hurts. And you feel like they are a vortex of misery and you just wish they would be different. You know, this doesn't describe every toxic person and doesn't describe toxicity to the fullest, but you know what I mean. You know when someone's toxic. So when you're around someone who is toxic and you do any type of behavior that takes away accountability, you are showing them that you are allowing it to happen. Doesn't mean you want it to happen. Doesn't mean you're doing it on purpose. It just means, yes, your behavior affects their ability to do it next time or not. Now, that doesn't mean that if my mom never cleaned up the glass and he did it himself when he sobered up, that he still wouldn't do it again. It doesn't mean that they change their behavior. It just means you get out of the cycle of that behavior. For example, if my mom never woke up my stepfather when he passed out on the floor with alcohol spilled all over him, he would have woken up and realized, wow, this is what I got myself into. It may have been a little embarrassing for him. It may not have changed his behavior, but that little seed might have been planted of, wow, so when I get drunk, this is what happens to me. I wonder if I should change my behavior. For a true alcoholic, for someone who really has trouble stopping drinking, it's not usually easy. They can't just say, hey, I'll change my behavior and that's that. They usually have to go through some sort of program, maybe therapy, but at least AA or something like that, so that they have a support system and a regiment and a mentor and things like that, if you're talking about an alcoholic. But there are other types of toxic behavior as well. But my main message to you is just to be aware of how you enable people, even the slightly toxic people. There are slightly toxic people in your life that just bug you, whether it's a coworker or a family member or a friend. They might do something that bugs you, yet you never say anything about it. It's sort of like my girlfriend, her ex, has racist tendencies, and she heard him saying something about someone that was very racist, and she was very upset. This is when they were going out or dating or whatever, and she goes, if I ever hear you say that again, I am out of here. And so he held back and never said a racist thing again in front of her. But at least she said something about it the very first time she heard it. So the very first time she heard it, she said, oh no, this behavior is not acceptable to me. And she made it clear. It didn't change him really at all, but at least she stood up at that moment and nipped it while it was fresh, while it was there. This is important to remember, is that when you see behavior for the first time that is toxic to you, that is so out of alignment with your values or ethics and morals in general, that if you don't stand up at that time, you are likely going to see it again. you are likely part of the allowing process. And I'm not putting that on you. I'm saying that they are responsible for their behavior. But if you're going to be around them and you don't say something or stand up or do something, they're going to think it's okay. And, you know, this is very similar to the story I tell when my stepfather showed up at my mom's door and I had an opportunity to let him in because I would always submit when he was around because I was always the child around him. But as the adult, I had the opportunity to take this moment and go, oh my God, this could be the moment that defines the rest of our relationship together. If I let him into my mom's house, then I am submitting and allowing toxicity to continue. But if I stand up and say, no, you're not allowed in, then I am stopping the toxicity right here and now. And then I can be congruent in myself and also send a clear message that, no, this is not acceptable. You're not supposed to be here. And that's exactly what I did. I stood up to him and I said, sorry, you're not welcome here. And he left. It was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do because I was always that little child around him. Even in my 30s and 40s, I still felt like a child around him. So when I accessed the adult, new and improved, healed me, I was able to set a precedent and say, no, from this point forward, this is how it's going to be. I stopped enabling. I stopped allowing. Can you do this? I don't know. I just want you to be aware. You know, your situation's probably a lot different than mine. You may not know anyone that's very toxic, and this doesn't apply. But I do want you to know that even, like I said, the small toxic things, like we have a good friend, my girlfriend and I have a good friend, that every now and then might say something inappropriate. Like this person will obligate us to do something for them when they haven't even asked us to do it. They'll just kind of assume that we're going to do it. And when that comes up, that feels toxic to me. It's like, wow, you're not even going to ask me if I want to do this? Don't get me wrong, they're a good friend. But at the same time, it would be nice to be asked. And I would probably do it anyway. But don't just assume that I'm going to do it, especially when you don't know my schedule. I mean, there's things involved there. But my girlfriend has actually stood up and said, you know, when you do that, it feels very demanding, and I don't want you to do that anymore. And this person wasn't offended. They didn't even know they were doing it. So my girlfriend was able to stop the enabling because beforehand, she did allow it, and she didn't know how to handle it. It was just odd. It was like a awkward moment when it happened. But she decided to stand up and say, look, when this happens, it doesn't feel very good. It doesn't feel like you're acknowledging what's right for me and what I need to do for myself. You just assume I'm going to do things. And so that did help the relationship, and it made things clear, and it stopped the behavior from being enabled over and over again. So there are light things, there are heavy things, there are difficult things in your life that you can do this for or not. But just be aware of what you are doing so that you're not always allowing toxic behavior. If there's something small you can do to start creating some accountability, some responsibility on their part, so you're not cleaning up the broken glass every time. Then they wake up and go, what happened? Not seeing any broken glass, not knowing that the glass was ever broke by them. Yes, it's kind of metaphoric to any situation you deal with, but you understand. Anyway, that's all I want to say on enabling. I hope this helps you. Sometimes it's tough. Sometimes you're stuck in a situation with other people that seems like there's no way out. And if that's the case and they don't change and you can't get out of the situation, then maybe you can start an escape plan. I don't know. But certainly just be aware of how your behavior might be enabling someone else's. Thanks for listening today. We'll be right back with some thank yous and we'll close the show. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank Asha with Get Out of the Mess. If you didn't get that number earlier, call her at 678 855-8777 and have access to an attorney anytime you need it. It's a low monthly fee. It's like, I don't know, 18 to 20 bucks a month, at least as of this recording. Check it out. GetOutOfTheMess.com or call her and ask her if this service is right for you. 678-355-8777. And I want to thank members of the Patron program, patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. It's a way to give back and a way to get some more TOB. Thank you, Patron members. I appreciate you. And I want to thank those of you using the Amazon link. Go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com and click on the Amazon button every time you shop Amazon, and you help the show out. It's a great way to give back, and it's doing what you're already doing anyway, shopping on Amazon. Everyone shops on Amazon now, don't they? No, I can hear it already. No, I don't. Well, I do, and I know others do as well. And I want to tell you about the Overwhelmed Brain book. If you just tuned into this show for the first time, or you've been listening for a while, but just aren't sure where to start with your personal growth journey, get the Overwhelmed Brain book. It leads you down the road, A to Z, how to get to full self-empowerment. I want you to be able to strengthen your self-worth and self-esteem and give you the motivation to show up in the world as your authentic self. Go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or your favorite bookstore today. And finally, thank you to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And in closing, I'm going to touch upon guilt for a little bit. I talked about guilt not too long ago. And one of the most important things to remember about guilt is that when you feel guilty for something, you probably want to apologize or maybe not want to apologize. But my suggestion is to apologize, but only once. I always suggest that when you feel guilty about something you did, to reach into your heart and absolutely feel so bad. Yes, I want you to feel bad. I want you to feel so bad and so sorry for what you did, and then apologize to the person that you think needs the apology. But when you do it, mean it. Mean it 100%. Absolutely, without a doubt, this is the apology that covers your guilt. That's how I want you to mean it. This is the apology that covers your guilt. This is the one that doesn't make up for anything. It just covers your guilt. You feel so guilty that you need to apologize, and boom, you do it. Now, when you really mean an apology, you can let the guilt go. It doesn't mean you still won't feel bad about what you did, but I want you to stop feeling guilty. Because an apology is passing the ball to the person you apologize to. It doesn't mean it lets you off the hook. I mean, they may not like your apology. They may not accept it. And that's fine. But what you need to do is once you apologize for something that you feel guilty about, the ball is in their court, and now they get to decide how your relationship continues. And this could be anything. It could be a friendship, romance, or family, anything. But the ball's in their court after you apologize. And only apologize once. If you apologize again after that for the same thing, then I'm going to say you probably didn't mean the first one, did you? That's a little harsh. And I don't mean to put that in your face because I've done the same thing. I've apologized profusely over and over for things. But I've learned that when you really mean an apology, you only have to say it once. And then if they bring it up again, you caused this to happen. You did this. You can say, look, I apologize for that. And you can either accept my apology, or you don't have to, but or not. But that choice is yours. I've come to terms with it. I know I did something wrong, and I still feel bad about it. But I don't have to be made to feel guilty about it anymore. That's what a true apology can do for something you feel guilty about. If you really feel guilty about something, and you're carrying that guilt with you, apologize once, and now the ball's in their court. It doesn't mean you're off the hook for what you did. I mean, you're still responsible for maybe any damage that you did. But I just want you to get past the guilt, because guilt is that cloud that follows you and affects you and causes you to do things that you normally wouldn't do if you didn't feel guilty. I mean, I've had clients that felt so guilty they couldn't get through a single day without crying or getting angry or getting upset. And once they let that guilt go, because they made the final apology, and I told them, make it your last apology and then hand it off to them. I'm not saying hand the guilt off. I'm saying that once you apologize, now they, the person that you're apologizing to, can make the choice to continue a relationship with you or not. And that's vital, because when it gets in their court, they don't have any leverage to make you feel bad anymore. I'm not saying you didn't deserve it. Maybe you deserved feeling bad about this and feeling guilty about it. But there's a point where it has to stop. There's a point when you feel guilty for a long time that it just has to stop. You cannot carry that guilt with you. You can't. I want you to stop feeling guilty. Now, if it's really fresh, if you did some sort of betrayal and it was just last week, you might need to feel guilty for a while. I'm being harsh. You might have to feel guilty for a while. This may need to sink in until you feel so guilty that you reach a new level in yourself that you know you'll never betray that person or anyone again. Because if you don't reach that and you hurt someone else in the future, then that's not a good thing. That's very unhealthy. It's harmful. It's not nice. So if it's fresh guilt and you deserve it, hate to say it that way, but you may have to live with it for a little bit. But there's a point where it has to stop. What is that point? I don't know. But I do know this. If you've done something really awful and it's been, let's say, 6 months, I'm just throwing it out there. If you still hold on to the guilt and it's thrown in your face, it's time for it to stop. It's time for you to reach inside to your heart and go, you know, I do feel guilty about this. I am so sorry. It's time for you to reach into your heart and give the most meaningful, final apology for that thing. And then you give it, and then you let it go. And then if they bring it up again, which often happens, you say, look, I apologize for that. And I'm not going to apologize again because I meant what I said. Now, if you don't want to accept that apology, that's fine. I understand. But I've come to terms with it, and I need you to do the same. And if they say, no, I can't do the same, I want you to feel bad for what you did, you can say, I do feel bad for what I did, but I'm not going to feel guilty anymore. I'm beyond that. I've apologized for this. I've learned my lesson. When you've learned your lesson, you are ready to move on. If someone else keeps you there, or if you keep you there because you keep thinking about what you did and you feel guilty, then make that apology meaningful and final so that you can let go of the guilt. If you have any bad feelings, you can deal with those, no problem. But it's time to move on from the guilt. Guilt is very hindering, very oppressive. I don't want you to keep that. But what I do want you to keep is an open mind so that you can step into your power and be firm in your decisions and actions. That way you can create the life you want. And if you're always taking steps to grow and evolve, you'll realize just how powerful you are. And I want you to know something, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you. You are amazing.